Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And good afternoon once again. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in this afternoon for Mike, who is away on some important business to support not only this radio station, but your access to it at all times in the future. I'm joined in the Waukesha studio this afternoon by my good friend Brian, the Madison studio, my good friend Evan. And we're chatting about a number of different issues important to the rule of law in America, to justice in America, prosecutions, legislative decisions about all kinds of things related to your rights, your prerogatives to exercise those rights in America. We chatted in hour number one about religion, about abortion and guns, and we've got an equally volatile and hopefully engaging agenda for the coming hour as well. But before we break into that second hour this afternoon of the Devil's Advocates radio program, we encourage you to call in. It's always 844-967-2789. And let's begin with one of those callers who's been hanging on the line for a while. CJ from Stoughton. CJ, glad to have you with us this afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call, James. As I, know about, I feel like it took January 6th for the Democrat Party to care about crime and police. You can just walk down State Street in Madison and see the disarray that crime has caused. And you know a statistic, 80,000 violent guns happen every year with handguns. And you know what percentage ghost guns are? 80,000? Only 390. This is a token attempt by the president to do nothing and to satisfy supposed voters, but this does nothing to solve crime. The resolution for crime is with the judges and the prosecution and holding people accountable. You can look all over New York, including the guy that just caused havoc on the subway in New York. And what did that have to do with anything? It was a ghost gun, you know, so what? What kind of gun it was. It was a violent crime with an illegal use of a gun.
A number of different thoughts there, CJ, and I agree with you on some, but not all. Undeniably, crime is becoming a greater issue again. We've seen that recently in virtually all areas, especially violent crimes, homicides, other things in our states and in our cities. Undeniably, that's going to be an issue and should be an issue, right, as we go forward with the campaigns this year and then again in the coming years. I would take a bit of exception to your assessment that the announcement by the president does absolutely nothing. Only insofar as my comment before about the notion that Congress does need to act. And Congress has not acted in ways that we know would impact the effect of guns in America. The things I described before the break, background checks, bans on assault weapons, lethal violent protective orders, all kinds of other things that we know work because they've worked before, and they work in states around the nation where they do in fact have those kinds of things. I think the president expressed his frustration, as I said, prior presidents have done the same, in his incapacity to do something because these are legislative things. And I agree with you, CJ, that legislators should in fact be the ones who are acting in these areas. And secondarily, you happen to be talking to a former criminal prosecutor for the federal government. I agree entirely that how do you go about ensuring safety and security? In part, it is by having the laws to enforce and ensuring that in the court courts, as you just described. You've got judges, you've got prosecutors, you've got defense attorneys, you've got everybody involved in the system who's addressing these problems in the courts. I'd offer one other perspective, and that is that all of us inside law enforcement, I think the president, this president, past presidents have also acknowledged that you don't address violent crime simply by legislating it away, right? You got to do many, many things. Violent crime is a product of poverty. You've got issues related to education, healthcare, family status, many, many things that legislatures can, in fact, do and should, in fact, be doing. Arming, if you will, executive branch officials, enabling private citizens to ensure that their safety and security is intact in their communities by doing those appropriate things to support common citizens, other citizens out there who need that kind of support. So not an easy issue at all. But one that plainly needs a lot of addressing because we continue to have this continuing issue with gun violence in America. So thank you for your comments, CJ. We're also going to go to Ross right now from Middleton. Ross, your thoughts or questions this afternoon?
Yeah. Hey Jim, and hey, Brian. I think like with guns, and I don't have too much experience, but my thought is like when you had this fella out there in New York, and I think to myself, how did this guy get a gun? So the question I asked, and it seems like it's still, is it too easy for someone to get a gun, or if after he's gotten a gun, as time marches on, if this person starts to lose his sense of reality, we don't really have a mechanism to kind of go back and say, because of our freedom of speech, people can say kind of crazy stuff, but we don't realize that some of these guys have guns. As a prosecutor, What do you guys like when you're prosecuting someone who's like committed crimes and stuff like that? Is there ever sort of this also this inclusion as to how did this guy get the gun, and what mechanism do we have in our whatever our kind of our criminal justice system to ensure that people that seem to have sort of lost touch with reality, basically, like, I don't know if they have a record of it, that they would have their guns taken from them.
Great questions, Ross. A lot to unpack there as well. Once again, the courts do wrestle with this. Prosecutors wrestle with it. Defense attorneys wrestle with it. Victim specialists wrestle with this. And investigatively, you bet, from the very start, there's a focus on, where did this gun come from? And that's why serial numbers are so important. That's frankly why, to the extent that ghost guns are in the news this week, that notion of underscoring the importance of serial numbers on pieces of a gun that can, in fact, be put together to kill people, that's a significant issue. And so what do prosecutors do? You try to figure out where the gun came from. A secondary, much related issue to that is, does this particular defendant who engaged in this criminal behavior, compromising our safety and security, should that person have had a gun legally, lawfully? There are prohibitions, as Antonin Scalia said in Heller 9 years ago. The Second Amendment is not an unconditional right to carry a gun by everybody under all circumstances. And there's some wonderful language in Heller that affirms that fundamental notion. So prosecutors and judges and defense attorneys try to figure out whether or not this person should have had a gun, whether there was something illegal about possessing his or her possession of it. There are certain kinds of weapons, silencers, for example, remain federally prohibited. And then there are questions about the use of it, which goes fundamentally to issues related to the person's background and history and education, all those things you just indicated. Likewise, a subject of a huge amount of investigation. Are there things that can be done beyond just prosecutions? Absolutely. I mentioned just before the break that there are these mechanisms in many states in the country. I call them lethal violent protective orders, or sometimes called ERPOs, emergency protective orders, where you can, in fact, identify somebody who may, in fact, be exercising their First Amendment right, but saying things that give you great concern about their mental status, their capacity to use a gun responsibly. Under these systems, you can, in fact, as a family member, somebody who knows that person well, petition a court and say, you know what, Your Honor, this particular person, I ask you to find by compelling evidence that person is no longer mentally capable of making the decisions about a proper use of a firearm. We're asking you to take it away from her or him temporarily. It's not an absolute unconditional prohibition forever. But until that problem is solved, that person can be prohibited. That's a mechanism that's out there. The federal legislature, the state legislatures can enact that in states and in the government generally throughout our country right now. Background checks are huge. That ensures that people who have in fact had histories should not in fact be possessing and purchasing guns. It ensures that the so-called gun loophole when it comes to gun shows and the loopholes there where I can walk into a gun show and not have to establish who I am through a background check. That kind of thing is a mechanism for addressing our gun problem generally. Many other kinds of things out there that can in fact be legislated. Not again that you can completely address the problem simply by legislation, simply by prosecution as we're chatting about, Ross, but again, understanding that everybody, and again, issues related to education and healthcare and community involvement and the family structure, even religion, those kinds of things, everything has got to be wrapped up together to address our violent issues in America very, very generally. So concur in the notion this is not easy, but does take some first steps. Everybody does their part, and we can begin to address the kinds of things we see on a regular basis. So Ross, appreciate very much your comments and questions as well. We're going to chat perhaps at the end of the hour about some other prosecutions that are out there, but I'm going to move and change direction here a little bit in the middle of our second hour here of the Devil's Advocates radio program to talk a little bit more about Russia and about what's going on in Ukraine, in particular, what the U.S. Department of Justice is doing in terms of prosecutions to address some oligarchs who may, in fact, be violating the law. Some announcements made just this past week by the Attorney General and by the Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, one of them having to do with a fellow named Konstantin Malofeyev, who was charged this week for the first time by our United States Department of Justice with violations of the sanctions imposed, secretly trying to acquire and run pro-Kremlin media outlets across Europe. Announced just this past week. Plainly, Mr. Konstantin Malofeyev is not in our jurisdiction, but an important move by the United States Department of Justice to enforce the law when it comes to these oligarchs who might thwart the efforts to keep us all safe and secure here, certainly over there in Europe as well. We'll chat more about the implications, the rule of law implications, what's going on in Ukraine, oligarchs, other things, right after the break. Listeners, encouraged to call in at 844-967-2789.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
You shoot your eye out, kid.